of our recent shows can be heard on the web at www.flashpoints.net. Many thanks to the members of our web team, Michael Jordan, Kevin Purcell, and David Green. And thank you for listening.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. Coming up next, Queer Voices.
On March 16, 2003, in Rafah, occupied Gaza, 23-year-old America Peace activist Rachel Corey was mowed down by an Israeli military bulldozer. Rachel was a human shield defending against the senseless destruction of a Palestinian home as a volunteer with the International Solidarity Movement. KPFT and People for Progressive Radio will be presenting a tribute to Rachel Corey August 15th and 16th. Her parents, Cindy and Craig Corey, will be our guests on Friday, August 15th at 7:30 p.m. at a tribute for Rachel at the First Unitarian Church, 5200 Fan, and then on Saturday, August 16th at the Station Museum at Alabama Inle Branch from 6 to 9 p.m. Call 713-526-4000 for time schedule. That's August 15th and 16th. This is Pacific Radio, KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening in our two-hour show. Don't follow our website tonight because we don't have this way out. For some reason, it wasn't recorded today, and we hope to have it back next week. In the second hour, of course, we will be doing our Outright Radio series, and this week it's on elders. In the first hour, we're going to be talking to Phil Walters from the Buyers Club. And also, Joan has a really exciting book interview coming up. All that and more, of course, is coming up. But first, we go to London for the BBC News and see what's going on in the world. You're listening to KPFT Houston at 90.1 and 89.5 in Galveston. Now to London.
BBC News with David Austin. President Bush says the decision of the Liberian president, Charles Taylor, to go into exile is an important step toward a better future for the Liberian people. He said the United States would work with others to achieve lasting peace. President Bush's comments came as Charles Taylor began his exile in Nigeria, from where Elizabeth Blunt reports.
The first stage of Charles Taylor's journey into exile took him to the Nigerian capital, Abuja, where he was greeted by President Obasanjo. But he's not being invited to stay there, nor in the country's main city, Lagos. The home chosen for him is in Calabar, right down on the Cameroon border, where a group of official guest houses has been renovated and refurnished for his use. Some of his family have already arrived, along with Mr. Taylor's bulletproof Mercedes limousine. Like Calabar itself, his new house looks comfortable and discreet, rather than grandiose or flashy. The Nigerian authorities are hoping that he'll accept a quiet retirement and one well away from the limelight.
The American Secretary of State, Colin Powell, said U.S. forces stationed off the Liberian coast were ready to discuss helping Nigerian peacekeepers get humanitarian aid moving out of the port area of Monrovia. The human rights group Amnesty International has accused the Mexican authorities of failing to investigate properly the killings and abductions of hundreds of women in the northern cities of Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua over the last 10 years. Amnesty accuses the Mexican authorities of unjustifiable delays in their inquiries and of a failure to follow up crucial evidence. Some detectives are accused of using torture and of fabricating evidence against suspects. One of the leading Islamic militant groups in Indian-administered Kashmir, Hizbul Mujahideen, has appealed to Kashmiri Hindus who fled the conflict there to return home. In a statement sent to the BBC office in Srinagar, the leader of the group promised full protection to Hindus who return to the valley. Fiona Wurge reports.
This is the first time that a militant group in Indian-administered Kashmir has offered to give returning Hindus protection, although there have been previous appeals for them to return home. Nearly 100,000 Hindus fled from Srinagar and other parts of the Muslim-majority Kashmir Valley when the conflict began 13 years ago. Tens of thousands of people have died in the guerrilla war waged by Muslim rebels against Indian rule. Kashmir is divided between India and Pakistan along a ceasefire line known as the Line of Control. The militant group, Hizbul Mujahideen, is not only offering protection, but also appealing to returning Hindus to join the insurgency against Indian rule.
You're listening to the news from the BBC. Memorial services are being held around Russia on Tuesday to mark the third anniversary of the loss of the nuclear submarine, the Kursk, and its crew of 118 men. The submarine sank during exercises in the Barents Sea. From Moscow, Sarah Rainsford reports.
A new memorial in St. Petersburg will mark 3 years since the sinking of the Kursk. 32 new headstones in the Serafimov Cemetery now mark the graves of some of the crew. They were victims of the worst naval disaster in Russia's peacetime history. But on one gravestone, the date of death is missing. Dmitry Kolesnikov became famous for the note that was found on his body when it was recovered from the wreck. The note revealed that 23 crewmen remained alive hours after the submarine sank. Many believe they might have been saved had the Russian Navy reacted in time.
Later this week, 40 families will petition the prosecutor to reopen the Kursk disaster inquiry, which closed over a year ago. United States forces in Iraq are investigating the killing by American troops of two Iraqi police officers in Baghdad. The incident occurred at the weekend as an Iraqi police car was chasing a van. When the police opened fire to stop the van, American troops nearby shot at one of the police cars. One policeman was killed, and Iraqi police say another was shot dead as he got out of the car with his hands up. The chief prosecutor in Nicaragua has said that the former president, Arnaldo Alemán, is to face charges of money laundering in the United States. On Friday, a Nicaraguan judge announced that Mr. Alemán, who was president until January last year, would be transferred from house arrest to prison. Mr. Alemán has appealed against the decision. France has announced emergency measures to stave off possible power shortages due to the unusually hot weather affecting much of Europe. As part of these measures, nuclear power plants will be allowed to discharge the water used to cool their reactors at higher temperatures than usual. The decision was taken after an emergency meeting between government officials and energy experts. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, this is Jack Valensky.
And I'm Joan Devlin.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
And J.D. is hiding out in Atlanta somewhere. I guess he's there, a work-related type of stuff.
Man, I'm going to Atlanta in like 3 weeks for Dragon Con.
You're always going somewhere.
I know. So. I just came back from Texarkana this weekend.
That must have been
you're
exciting.
What?
I'm going to Atlanta for Dragon Con, which is the largest sci-fi festival in the country. And Glenn, turn off your phone ringer.
Yes, it's not Joan this time.
That's right.
And actually, we sort of have a few minutes to talk. Our shows have been pretty tight the past month and a half because we've been running that second hour thing. And in the first hour, we also run This Way Out. And This Way Out isn't, for some reason, it didn't get recorded today. Hopefully, it will be back next week. But in fact, one of the segments was talking about that new movie, Camp, that's opening up this weekend at Greenway. Camp is, it's sort of like Fame, but mm-hmm. you go to camp for it.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, and I mean, the previews were pretty interesting from what I saw and the talk about it. It's pretty great. I think there's actually a fundraiser for a couple organizations. It's going to be at Greenway and probably then later on open at a few other places.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. We'll have to go see it.
A couple other things going on. The caucus endorsement meeting was last Wednesday, and it was pretty interesting. I mean, there was full... they hadn't had a meeting at a special place because there's so many people there. And the endorsements, the speeches were great. They, of course, endorsed Bill White. For
Denise Parker.
And Denise Parker,
controller.
And of course, Sue Lovell, and a number of other people that will be, it's probably on their website already. I believe it's hglpc.org is their website. And we'll be talking about the stuff coming up to the elections in the next couple weeks, or probably next month, actually. What else is going on? There's like queer shows all over the place on TV.
I know, and that Queer Eye for the Straight Guy seems to have just become this huge hit.
Yes, it's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting to watch. Actually, I wish they'd come and help me out a bit. Or maybe help us all out. We ought to have them on the show. And then, of course, there's also that dating show that's, I don't know.
I don't know about that one, but I know guy's getting a whole lot of press. I think those gentlemen are going to be on Jay Leno here shortly.
Yes, well, you know, Bravo's somewhat owned by NBC, so NBC is using that. Plus, they're also showing West Wing now on Bravo. Other things, of course, there's some stuff going on in the community with murders, TG murders.
Yes, that's right. Transgenders, there's a fear that there's a serial killer. We have had two murders. I believe we had a third one this week. I haven't gotten all the details yet. But there is apparently someone driving around and shooting transgendered people. And so we would advise everyone just be careful, be safe. Three women have been killed in the last 3 months. And the first one was killed on June 19th. Second one was killed on July 20th. And apparently the third one was killed this past Thursday, which would have been August 7th. So be very careful when you're out there. There's little information right now on this person, just descriptions of cars, apparently their drive-by type shootings. So be very careful out there.
Okay. And we have a feature now, JD, a music feature that we're going to play now.
Queer Music Heritage.
Hello, this is J.D. Doyle with a Queer Music Heritage New Music Spotlight. My regular show, Queer Music Heritage, is heard monthly on Queer Voices on the fourth Monday of the month. But as that segment is more oriented towards the older music of our culture, I often do not get to feature as many new artists as I'd like. And there are plenty of very talented artists whose work deserves to be shared with our listeners. So this feature is designed to do just that. You get to hear some of the music from the artist's latest CD, along with some interview comments. Tonight's spotlight is on New York artist Jeremy Blue, and his debut album is called Embracing This. When I first got this album last summer, I was immediately impressed with it. In fact, I think I played it 5 times in a row. I love his style of singing. His music is acoustic-based, but he brings his own soulful style to it. In fact, he calls his style soul folk. And I was even more impressed when I met him and got to see him sing live in New York. His stage presence is just amazing. He has a lot of charisma. And he's charming and sexy and articulate. He's a very nice guy. And no, I'm not his press agent. So on to the interview. Jeremy, how would you describe your CD and musical style to someone who's never heard it?
I like to describe music as soul folk, a combination of folk and pop music, bringing together a lot of feelings of soul, a lot of feelings of experience of life. And I find that there's a tenderness that runs through the CD, a real desire and yearning to really become aware of where it is that I've been and what it is that my experience of life is and where I'm leading, and most importantly, where I am right now.
Who is your audience?
I often try and figure out who my audience is, but frequently what happens is I play so many different kinds of music, I find that I enjoy playing for a very, very varied audience. Sometimes I play pretty laid-back music, and for that, I tend to find that my audience, it tends to be middle-aged folks. And then sometimes I like to bring a lot more rock influence or a lot more high energy. And I find then that the age of the folks doesn't seem to matter at that point. But the audience I'm singing for are basically people who are really interested in looking into somebody, looking into their life.
Is it important for you to be out as a musician?
It is important for me to be out as a musician. Growing up, in the time that I did, it still was a little before, but there wasn't really a lot of other out musicians making music. And it was frustrating growing up, feeling like it was an industry that was occupied by a lot of people who were not like me. And so for me now as a musician, I'd like to be out, to allow it to be seen, not something that would be ashamed of, in hopes that other people feel more comfortable being out with their music as well.
Who were your influences?
Well, coincidentally, a lot of things happened when I was 16 years old. I came out of the closet to myself. I got my first guitar, and I was introduced to the music of the Indigo Girls. So I feel like the Indigo Girls kind of were a backbone for me as a musician, and also as an out musician or as a gay musician.
The song Don't Know Where starts off your CD. Can you tell us about it?
Don't Know Where. I couldn't sleep one night, and there were just these words that were going through my head. More than a city has inside, more than an ocean has of wide, more than a dreamer has to hide. And they just kind of kept running through, and so I wrote them down, and didn't know what would happen to them. And the next day I tried to turn them into a song, and it didn't work. And it felt really forced. But then something happened within the next day or two where I just kind of sat down and I just began writing about all the places that I feel like I've been in my life, contemplating where it is that I am right now and how I got where I am right now. And so the song ended up ultimately writing itself once I finally let go of trying to force it into becoming a song.
Can you please tell us about the song New to Me?
Well, I've been in love once, and it was quite a relationship, and it was a relationship that carried me across the country and is the reason why I ended up moving. And shortly after I moved, I really realized that the relationship had to end, and it was a painful end, and it was something that I decided needed to happen. And after the relationship ended, I wrote many, many songs exploring the pain and exploring the aftermath of that relationship. And New to Me is one of the songs that came out of that relationship ending. It kind of comes out, or it comes out of that place where a relationship ends and then something else is allowed to begin.
On a pair, but did I want this power to feel so much, to feel at all? Did I want the power?
You only did one cover song on the album, but you picked a good one, If I Only Had a Brain from The Wizard of Oz. How did you pick that song?
If I Only Had a Brain is one of my favorite songs in the whole wide world, and I don't really know why or how, but it's been a song I've sung as a singer for about 10 years now. It was a song, it was one of the first blues songs first times I ever really explored the blues, and since I've recorded If I Only Had a Brain, I've done exploring the blues a lot more, and old jazz tunes a lot more. It seems to me that song is kind of a doorway into a whole new place for my voice to go and kind of mess around.
Jeremy, your song, Garçon Feel, is a very intimate song. It starts off with the words, I am boy, I am girl. This is an idea that is not often expressed in music. Is there a story behind that song?
Before I realized I was gay, I realized that I didn't fit in terms of the gender definitions that seemed to be imposed on me by my family and by my friends and my schools and my religion growing up. And it's been a lifelong struggle. I remember wanting to play with my sister's dolls when I was growing up and not being allowed. And I remember dancing in front of my family growing up and being looked at like it wasn't the right thing for a boy my age to be doing. And I remember dressing up like Madonna once at my friend's house. She dressed me, I was probably 8 years old, and she was dressing me up like Madonna. We're listening to Like a Virgin or something, and her mom walked in and sent me home because she felt it was inappropriate. And so my whole life seems to have been a lot of stop signs and a lot of people shaking their finger at me saying, no, you're not right, you're not appropriate, this isn't acceptable. Then a couple of years ago I saw a French film called Ma Vie en Rose, and I was watching it and just captivated by this little boy's courage and awareness of who he was or who she was. And one of my favorite lines in the movie is when the child says, je suis un garçon fille. And he's laughed at, he's scoffed at by his family, but I think he touched on something so critically human, in that we all are garçon boy and fille girl. We all grow up with that, and this child had the ability to really hold on to that. So I wrote the song Garçon Fille out of my experience of feeling like I've always been playing between these two alleged opposites of masculinity and femininity, and I don't feel like one or the other is really appropriate for me. But them both together create me, my feeling of humanity.
What's the gayest song on your CD?
What's the gayest song on my CD? I don't really know for sure. I would have to... I mean, in some ways, I think Don't Know Where has the whole twink on a Chelsea Street line, so that one kind of strikes me as having a little gay buoyancy to it. And then Garçon Fille, again, not necessarily a gay song, but a song that does really, for me, scratch the surface of gender issues.
Who's the person behind the music?
The person behind the music is someone I'm just getting to know right about now. And every time I step onto the stage and play for people, it seems like I get to see a little bit more of who he is. It's kind of been a thrilling adventure to allow whatever it is that I am and whoever this person is that's behind this music happening, sort of blossoming. And it seems like the more I embrace the different parts of myself, the fuller and stronger I feel as a person.
Okay, you've just finished your first CD. You essentially did it all yourself. Looking back, do you have any thoughts about the whole process?
I don't know. It's been an amazing journey going through this whole process and having people along the process who have helped me. But being pretty much primarily the one who's responsible to start, stop, and do everything in between, or else it doesn't get done. And so it's been kind of a freaky joyride of ups and downs, getting this out there, and then getting it out there, and then the feeling of vulnerability of, oh my God, I just put something out into the world where now people can look right into my life, and they can judge me for better or for worse. But the more I'm putting it out there in front of, the more confident I am feeling behind it, and the more I'm feeling my guts are behind it. And the more I'm seeing the music that's on the CD continuing to expand and continuing to grow even beyond where it is on the CD, and that's a treat.
I've got one more song I want to ask Jeremy about, and it's one of my favorites from his album. But before I do that, I want to thank him for the interview and thank you for listening. This is J.D. Doyle with the Queer Music Heritage New Music Spotlight. My regular show can be heard on Queer Voices on KPFT on the fourth Monday of the month. And you can also listen to this interview at my website at www.queermusicheritage.com. Now back to Jeremy. We've been listening to his debut CD, which is called Embracing This, and you can find out more about him at www.jeremyblue.com. Jeremy, last question. Of what song that you've written are you the most proud, and why?
One of the more recent songs that was written for the CD was Some Guy, and actually I wrote that song after I recorded the other 10 tracks on the CD, and that one just sort of popped out. I wrote the song actually, though it's a kind of a rock song or a folk rock song, I wrote it in tears at a time in my life when I was really frustrated with feeling a lot of pressure, and I felt like the song kind of allowed me to bring together myself as a musician, but also to allow myself just to be some guy. And so when I play the song now, it tends to be a song that feels very, very rooted in my gut. And that is a feeling I most love about performing. So I feel that that is one I am most proud of.
Maybe I was just 5 years old, playing all alone, letting my fantasies unfold. Standing in the spotlight for all the folks on my street, my whole staring wide-eyed at me. I wasn't gonna be just some guy. Maybe it was the fourth grade when I brought home my first card of straight A's. And I love the way my family looked at me. I love the way they knew I wouldn't be some guy you'd see at the laundromat sometime, or you'd meet at the corner store waiting in line, or see driving a beat up car. Now I'd be so much more than just some guy. Every strawberry tales cracking the moon. With leaves of gold. And I huffed and I puffed, and I sure got tired of trying to climb all these invisible high wires. And I just fell into this little quiet town, a place where mostly everything's mostly nowhere around. Okay to be just some guy who lives in a little house on a hill, who works up, 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 up until it's time for my nap. Hey, what about that? Now I'm just some guy you'd see at the laundromat sometime, or you meet at the corner store waiting in line, or see driving his beat up car. Thought it would take me so far to be just some guy, but some guy may not even save the world today. I may not even save the world today. I may not even save the world.
This is Queer Voices. You know, as fast as things move these days, it can be hard to try to keep up with the latest developments in all the different nutritional supplements and all of the different medicines that are available for HIV/AIDS. And one of the definitive sources for information on this sort of stuff is the Buyers Club, right here in Houston. And Fred Walters from the Buyers Club is here. And Fred actually started the Buyers Club 7 years ago. And you started it out of your house.
Well, actually, my closet. Mm-hmm. And we got so big that we finally had to come out of the closet.
Okay, now that we've got that over with, you attended some conferences recently, which were held to sort of network with AIDS community leaders and come up with updates on treatments and sort of improve networking. Well, what happened there?
Well, we flew up to Dallas for one conference, drove out to the Galleria for another, and at the Warwick for another, mainly to hear one of the nation's leading experts on HIV, Dr. Gary Cohan in Los Angeles. And he kind of summarized what are some of the realities of people on treatment right now. And then the other thing that we did was we got to meet a lot of the other AIDS organizations in the state and network with them and find out what's working. And I have to tell you, some of it was scary and some of it was hopeful. Like, one of the things was 10% of all new HIV infections, those people are going to be resistant to a lot of the drugs that are out there. And that's probably not a new thought, but they finally have some data on that, which means that if you are one of those 10%, your drug choices, some of which may be very easy to take and some of which may be very difficult to take, are going to be a lot more limited. So another reason to have protected sex. Something else is, let me just say that, trailing on that thought, one way to figure out if you are resistant to some of the drugs is to get what's called a genotype test. But I think the one that's out now that's a lot more cost effective is called PhenoSense. And that will tell you a lot more. Another thing is we're finding that in clinics where they're testing for HIV and Hep C, in some clinics, it's coming back 3-to-1 infection with Hep C. And then probably about 10% of those is about co-infection with Hep C and HIV. So Hep C is definitely on the rise. And if you have HIV, you are in for a drop. It's not a gloom and doom story, but it's going to be a little bit more difficult or a little bit more hard to manage an illness when you have two to look after. What the docs are saying is that if you have Hep C and your virus is out of control, your HIV virus is out of control, to manage the HIV virus first, then worry about the Hep C virus. So that was one thing that was kind of new. Also, the new drug by Bristol-Myers is coming out, Reataz, and it's also known as atazanavir. And that drug is once-a-day dosing, which is a good thing, and it's also a bad thing. Once a day is great. You only have to think about it once a day. But you also got, the other drugs that you got to take maybe 2 or 3 times a day. So we're still not at once-a-day dosing yet, but soon they think that's coming down the road. Also, Reataz, like many of the new drugs that are coming out, has to be broken down in an acid environment, which means all those prescription pharmaceuticals that Prevacid, all the acid reducers that you have to take for heartburn, you can't take those anymore. So that's leaving a lot of people in some pain. But there's a simple solution for that. Things like digestive enzymes that you can find any health food store. They contain ingredients called amylase, protease, lipase. Those things really work well. So you can substitute those. And they work just as good as the prescription forms do. And then all the agencies found that we're all kind of confused because, they presented all these case studies to us like, given patient A with these problems, what drugs would you recommend? And at times, we all looked at each other like, we don't know what to recommend. I mean, there's so many choices. Which of the non-nukes would you choose? Which of the nukes would you choose? Which of the proteases would you choose? And finally, the doc looked at us and said, there's so many choices. That's why, it's confusing to us sometimes. So that's why he told us, to always look for a doc that's been certified by one of two agencies to treat HIV. One of the agencies was the American Academy of HIV Medicine, and they credential you to treat HIV. Another organization was the Infectious Disease Society of America. And both of those, they put the MDs through really stringent educational programs, and they test them to make sure that they know about all the choices and about some of the drug interactions that come with HIV meds, food, or vitamins even. There are some drug interactions that you can have with, most everyone knows about St. John's wort. It lowers the levels of protease inhibitors. And actually, on that note, we're going to be talking about that on September 27th, some of the interactions between drugs and vitamins at a conference called HIV Wellness Conference. And I think the ad is in the current issue of Outsmart, the full-page ad. It's going to be on a Saturday between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Shannon Schrader is going to be our keynote speaker to talk about once-a-day dosing. And we also are going to talk about how to read your lab results. You wouldn't believe how many doctors out there, I won't mention any names on the air, but you could call me, and that are just letting your patients walk around out there like time bombs waiting to go off. High triglycerides, high cholesterol, high liver enzymes, low white blood cells. And it's clearly on the lab report, and the docs are not telling their patients about it. Now, the good ones are, and I'll tell you those are if you call me, the good ones and the well-known ones are doing that. But, you know, when we had a Ryan White grant last year, and part of that Ryan White grant required us to get lab results from our clients, we would get the strangest looks. Well, did your doctor tell you that your liver enzymes are off the charts? No. What are liver enzymes? You know, and they're not on medicines for any of this stuff. I mean, we also check that out. But so we want to educate people and help them understand why it's important to know your own lab results, because the docs only got less than 5 minutes to spend with you in the room. That's the last thing they're going to tell you about.
Right, because it just brings up more questions, which requires more time.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there have been cutbacks in programs like Ryan White, and there are some folks now that are left with basically no options for treating HIV. None of the expensive drugs is available to them because they don't have the income to buy it themselves, and these other programs are being cut back. Are there lower cost over the counter herbal alternatives?
There are, but before I go into that, I want to also structure treatment interruptions, people going off their drugs. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we learned at this conference was, yes, structured treatment interruptions work, but there's a big caveat to that. And mainly if you have fallen below 200 T cells or have extremely low T cells, structured treatment interruptions typically are not successful for people who have extremely low T cells, but for people with high T cells, they tend to work pretty well. Along with herbal and nutritional supplements, yes, there are things that can help a lot. One of the things is a product called IP6. It's basically a B vitamin with some other things added. And what that does is it helps to raise white blood cells, also known as natural killer cells. And that's important if you get an infection. There are some other herbals that are out there that we're kind of looking at doing clinical trials on, like with some of the local docs. One of the products tends to work on the same premise that Fusion T20 does, which helps to lower the virus in the body. But we're not telling people that, but we're kind of looking at that. There's a lot of research behind this, and I believe the NIH is looking at this one particular product. It's called CM4. There's another one out there that is, it's olive leaf, but it's an extremely high potent form of olive leaf. And in some studies, it has shown to lower the viral load. You know, there's a lot of herbs out there that do lower the viral load, but they don't lower it like the protease inhibitors do. I mean, there's clinical trials that actually show that, but it's never been something dramatic. There are things that you have to kind of do aside from the virus, like you have to keep your cholesterol in check and your triglycerides in check, and there are things that you can do. Fish oils do wonders for high triglycerides. Other things, other problems that we see are like blood pressure. There's lots of people that have to pay for blood pressure medicine, and there are things that you can do. They're called anti-ACE peptides. Had to look. And they work really, really well.
You have to understand, Fred brought show and tell with him to the radio interview. Now, actually, these are our props, so that in case, like the rest of us, you know, you get old, you forget names. But you've got a whole bag full of stuff here.
I do. There is one thing I want to say. Actually, Shannon Schrader sends people over to us all the time to get something called Liver Care. And it works really well to lower liver enzymes and to help repair the liver. And we always know that, well, he doesn't do it anymore, but whenever he would send people to us, he would say, go get that liver tox stuff. And I was like, did Schrader send you? but there's also things like I was saying earlier, digestive enzymes help with acid reflux. And that's important, as I said, because, you know, the drugs are going to have to have an acid environment. Gas, bloating, diarrhea. Oh, my God. Diarrhea is probably the number one side effect that we hear about. And, you know, depending on how bad it is, there's a whole arsenal of things that we can help with. Everything from calcium, would you believe calcium? Several times a day, up to 2,100 milligrams will stop that. It stops diarrhea, sometimes caused by protease inhibitors. And that was actually discovered by accident. One of the docs in Los Angeles noticed that some of his patients were getting it because they were taking high doses of calcium. And then a couple of the AIDS organizations out there did studies on it, and sure enough, it stopped it. Something that most people with HIV don't know about is melatonin. If you read the back of the melatonin bottle, it says, do not take if you have an autoimmune disorder. And that's something that we're going to have the speaker in September address, because a lot of people take it. You know, we sell it. But I think, you know, what people always ask me, well, should I take it or not? And I have no formal credentials in medicine, but I always tell people, you know, if it's every once in a while, it's probably not going to be a big deal. But if it's something you use on a regular basis, be careful. Like echinacea, people with HIV should not be taking echinacea all the time. It's something that would be an every once in a while thing. And that's another herb we're going to address. And then just something else I wanted to mention. You know, we also have a lot of sexual side effects that come with being positive or taking drugs. And
Jack, are you paying attention to this?
There is something that it's herbal. It's I won't mention the name on the air, but it worked like clockwork. And we've just been really amazed at that one. I always say sex will get people's attention. But
And actually, I can tell you, I tried it and it did nothing for me, but that's beside the point.
Okay. Well, you're the weird 10%, I guess. And then memory, there's something called DMAE that works really, really well for that. I know that that's something I have to start very, very soon. But
wait a minute, what did you say?
DMAE.
DMAE, okay.
And then, of course,
what do the letters stand for?
Oh, God, I don't know. I've only been doing this 7 years.
It's my job to ask the tough questions here. Well, if I had stronger glasses, I could read what it says on this label. It actually says there's a compound in there.
That one,
yeah. The same sort of thing you find on the back of cereal boxes, you know, if you read the label there.
And then we have glucosamine chondroitin, which is a standard in helping with joint pain. And, you know, that's something that a lot of people, like with protease inhibitors, their bone degeneration, that's a really big one. So we do a lot with that.
Now, for more information, you have a website. So, I mean, folks don't have to actually come into the store to get this information. They just go right to the website, right?
Correct. Our website is HoustonBuyersClub.org. If you can't remember that, HoustonBuyersClub.com.
And the store hours are?
10 to 7. We just changed them.
Good.
Monday through Friday, and 10 to 2 on Saturday. Also, let me just, if there's some other tests that people should get done at their doctor's office, and if they want to come into the store, we have a whole list of those tests for people with HIV and people with AIDS.
And once again, the conference that's coming up in September.
It's called the HIV Wellness Conference. It's going to be at the Holiday Inn, 10 to 2. It's a free lunch, and they have great food.
Holiday Inn?
Oh, I'm sorry, Kirby and 59.
Okay.
Next to the Red Cross.
Is the information on the website?
It will be tomorrow. Okay. Our web man is out of town, but it is an Outsmart magazine, or as I like to call it, Outsmart Fagazine.
Okay. Fred Walters, the founder of the Buyers Club and font of information, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Hi, I'm Calvin. Do you have an opinion but have difficulty expressing it in public? Are you afraid to express your views because you can't organize your thoughts or control nervousness? Would you like to inspire, inform, entertain, or motivate others more efficiently? Toastmasters International is a nonprofit educational organization devoted to helping you improve those communication skills. Together, we help you overcome your fear of speaking in public in a social, supportive atmosphere. We provide coaches and mentors to guide you in your path to improve public speaking. The club that I'm a member of, Southwest Speakers, meets every Thursday at 7:15 p.m. at the Asian Chamber of Commerce, 7457 Holland Drive. You can always find a club that fits your schedule. Please visit www.toastmasters.org for more information about a club near you, or call 281-495-6946, and we'll be glad to help you speak your mind.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, I'm Joan Devlin, and I have on the phone with me Michael Mencia, who is the author of Love in the Time of HIV, The Gay Man's Guide to Sex, Dating, and Relationships. And I wanted to talk to you a bit, Michael, about your own status. How long has HIV been a presence in your life, and how has its role changed over time?
Well, good evening, Joan. First of all, I'd like to say that for me, it's been 10 years. Basically, I found out in 1993, and oddly enough, I made a reverse deal with God in the sense I was working as a clinical social worker with troubled adolescents. And I said, if I tested positive, I would shift my work and start working with people who are HIV positive like I am. And so when Jeanette, God took me up on my deal, and I've been working as a therapist and then writing this book, which this is now coming out this week.
And what is, you know, for many years in the 80s, those of us who go back to that time, you know, letting someone know that you were HIV positive was kind of the death knell on your on your sex life in a lot of ways, because people were so afraid. And now we almost have a reverse situation where there's a lot of young people out there who, for whatever reason, are so completely unafraid of catching the virus that they don't use any kind of protection at all. What is the happy medium there? What is the realistic expectation of someone who in this day and age is HIV positive as far as dating and romance?
Well, first of all, what I really believe is that relationships and intimacy is a right for everyone, independent of your HIV status. And you're so right about disclosure as being a real major hurdle. And that is the first thing I really work with people when they're dating is how do you tell someone that you're HIV positive? How do you meet someone with your when you have HIV? All these kind of factors contribute to how we're redefining our own intimate, romantic, and sexual lives. Because back in the 80s, people only perhaps had 2 years. So they basically found out they may have been in a relationship, or there was a scramble to believe that they're either going to be alone or no one would want them before they died. Now people have longer lives and therefore have greater opportunities to experience intimacy in their own lives.
Mm-hmm. And is it still as major a hurdle, though? I mean, do you still have people who honestly believe that if they'd reveal their status to their current partner, that that person will just get up and walk away?
Well, interestingly, one study indicated that 82% of men who revealed their status to their partners 6 months later were still in relationships, versus those who didn't. Mm-hmm. So I certainly believe that it is still a hurdle. I'm even delighted myself when, I'm single right now, when someone will tell me their HIV status instead of me having to, be the one to do it first. And for so many of us, that's why I really stress or emphasize good old-fashioned dating, getting to know someone, is that if you know someone, most of my patients and most of my peers tell me that it is those people that they know that they feel comfortable sharing their status, and it's also kind of a good safety mechanism.
Mm-hmm. And would you how would you advise someone with HIV to go about dating? Because, dating is a stressful situation regardless of status.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have that pressure kind of on top of it, what is your advice? What should people do? What are their, should they go online? Should they go to bars? I mean, what would be their best way to go about, starting a relationship?
Well, certainly, I don't know about bars, because I think loud disco music and flashing videos is not conducive to conversation. And conversation is what you need. I think it's flirtation, conversation, and then you think about penetration. So looking at things that are more step-by-step. But what is exciting now is that being HIV positive is almost like what it was like being gay in the 40s and the 50s. That there are now underground parties in which positive men are meeting other positive men in safe private parties or houses or even like on cruise ships and are renting out hotels where revealing your status is not a factor. So for some, that might be the first step. Also, I invite your listeners to my website, which is www.hivandrelationships.com. Further in, I have links to websites where there are positive personals. There are thousands of us living with HIV and thousands of us who have the right to a complete, intimate, romantic, and fulfilling love life.
And talk a little bit, too, about some of the recent articles that have been written about what they call, we're calling people bug chasers, people who see something glamorous and possibly having HIV. And even the kind of backlash where now you've got a lot of people, mostly younger people, younger men, that are into barebacking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think two things. First of all, this article that was put out by Rolling Stone about bug chasers, in my work and in clients and peers, I think that's a very small minority of people who have some very serious psychological problems, in which they're actively looking to get infected. And a lot of positive men who are in mixed status relationships with negative partners or just out dating really are very concerned about the sexual well-being of their partners. There's almost a type of sexual altruism that is unique to the gay community in the sense that, we really do have almost like a caring compassion within our own sex lives. And so I really challenge this kind of small minority that does that. And those who do engage in bug chasing, I would encourage them to see a compassionate therapist, who can help them address what is driving that. Barebacking is another big thing that's going on, certainly within the gay community, and that's a conscious decision not to use condoms, which certainly if you don't know the status of your partner, you're putting yourself at extreme risk. And even people who will tell you that they're negative, it may be the presumption of their last test, or they just assume that they're negative because they've never been tested.
Mm-hmm.
So something to be aware of.
And let's add something else into the mix, because along with HIV, there are other things out there that people need to be tested for: syphilis, gonorrhea. HIV can exacerbate any of these, particularly syphilis.
Mm-hmm.
What would your advice be to people who just kind of walk around going, well, I don't feel sick, I don't think I need to worry about anything?
CDC guidelines say that sexually active adults should get tested at least once a year. For gay men who are even more sexually active, I recommend twice a year, and you're absolutely right. Barebacking, separate from even HIV, there's all kinds of things from the diseases you mentioned to anal warts. Nobody I know, and I've worked with patients who've had the procedure, wants a a knife stuck up there in that part of their region, they'll be polite on your air. So those are things to consider as well.
And what would your advice be, too, for those who are in mixed status relationships? What kind of special challenges do they face?
Well, certainly, I think you can have long-term fulfilling relationships. And what I'm finding is that it's almost a paradoxical kind of event, in that being in a mixed status relationship, for some couples, you have two people who are invested in the health of not only the relationship, but of each other. And so that if someone was single or if they were having sex with partners that they didn't know their status, there may not be that same level of diligence to the relationship or to their own sexual activity. So for couples in which there's mixed status relationships, it certainly adds some challenges, but I've interviewed many couples who've had successful relationships and certainly even bumpy relationships. And the important thing is to be invested in the health of both partners.
And what advice would you give someone? We've talked about, you know, the mixed status relationships, but how about relationships where you do have two individuals who are HIV positive? Is it important for them to use protection as well, or does it not matter at that point? What advice would you give to people because they're both dealing with their own health and their partner's health? I mean, what would be some advice for those?
Mm-hmm. Well, I almost would like to reframe the question in the sense that as a couples therapist, most of my work is working within the aspects of how do they relate to one another in their own romantic lives. And so partners where they're both positive is something I think that's been under-researched and under-looked at in just how people navigates those aspects. My own former partner, who I lost 7 years ago, 6 years ago this week, was a beautiful HIV-positive man, 32 years old, worked for the Attorney General, Janet Reno. And what each of us, by being positive, it allowed us a certain kind of intense honesty that we could live our lives in the aggressive pursuit of joy, and that there was a unique empathy that flowed between us. But also, there's challenges when, you know, one partner's health starts to deteriorate, and it can contribute to unique stresses in the relationship.
Now, if people want to get your book, what are some of the ways they can go about getting it?
Well, it's certainly available at gay-friendly bookstores or your local gay and lesbian bookstore. Online at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, or directly from my website, which is www.HIVandRelationships.com.
Well, great. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us this evening. We've been talking to Michael Mancia. He is the author of Love in the Time of HIV, The Gay Man's Guide to Sex, Dating, and Relationships. And you are listening to Queer Voices.
And Joan, it's time to thank those who we had on the show, because we need to get things wrapped up so that we can make way for Outright Radio. Jack.
Well, of course, we want to thank Fred Walters from the Buyers Club. And Joan just had a wonderful interview with an author.
Yes, Michael Mancia, author of Love in the Time of HIV.
And in the second hour, this week's subject is elders. Stories of growing old with grace in the gay community.
And in case you missed the URL for the Buyers Club, it is HoustonBuyersClub.org. And don't forget the .org part, because it's not a .com, it's a .org.
As of most of the things we talk about are usually .orgs.
Right.
Right. And then for more information about the show here itself, you can go to www.queervoices.org. And you can send email to Jack. And Jack's email address is jack@queervoices.org. And so if you'd like to be on the program, or you'd like to help out, or like to contribute in some way to the program or to KPFT in general, contact us by one of those means. Just send a note to Jack, or call the radio station during normal business hours, and I'm sure that they would be happy to put you in touch with us.
You listen to KPFT, you enjoy some of our fine programming, you have done your part to keep us commercial-free by calling in a pledge of support. Hats off to you for taking that first step. But before you settle into that fantastic feeling, don't forget, you still need to send in that pledge of support to finalize your promise to KPFT. But be warned, that fantastic feeling will soon follow. Thanks for supporting KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky, Joan Devlin, and Glenn Holt.
From PRI, Public Radio International, it's Outright Radio. I'm David Kimmore. Today on Outright Radio, we present stories of queer homeless youth. Kids who, by virtue of heavy circumstance, find themselves suddenly without home or family, and their fight to regain their strength, pride, and reason for living. First up, D. Mae Roberts brings us the story of Miracle, a young black lesbian living on the streets of Portland, Oregon.
What's really sad is I know that when I get into my apartment, if and when I do get an apartment, I know that every night I go to sleep, I'm going to wonder if I'm still going to wake up and be in that place, you know, or if I'm still going to be able to come back that night.
In the second half of the show, the story of Kevin, a man who managed to overcome his own homelessness, now makes the rounds helping others in Phoenix.
I definitely see myself as a guide or the mentor because I've been homeless. I've been in this situation. I've been abandoned by my family, and I've experienced a lot of the things that this kid's going through.
All true stories and all on the theme of Out on the Streets, today on Outright Radio. We hope you'll join us for the next hour as we present these extraordinary stories from the heart of gay America. It's difficult to determine the actual numbers, but the generally agreed upon statistics on queer homelessness say that as much as 40% of homeless youth between the ages of 13 and 21 identify as gay, lesbian, bi, or transgender. And most of those kids were thrown out of their homes by their parents when they came out or their sexuality was discovered. Additionally, according to Robert Connolly of Indiana Youth Group in Indianapolis, only a small percentage of homeless youth actually end up living on the streets, that a much higher percentage have been ejected by their families and then end up couch surfing and relying on their friends, which is a fairly tenuous and unstable source of housing for youth. They also tend to fall through the cracks as they are often underage and not emancipated from their parents, leaving them unable to get work, health care, and attend school. By federal definition, these youth are homeless. Now, in Portland, Oregon, estimates are that there are 1,000 homeless youth living in the downtown area at any given time, and that 30% of them are gay. There is a bit of good news. The Multnomah County Office of School and Community Partnerships says that the number of street kids is on the decline due to a well-organized network of services that work together to get them off the street. As you'll hear in the first half of our show, physical and mental abuse, drugs and alcohol, or some major family trauma are almost invariably the reason for the homelessness. For Miracle Draven, it was all of the above. Producer D. Mae Roberts spent several weeks with Miracle on the streets. But before we begin, a word of caution for some of our younger listeners. Today's show contains few references to some of the details of drug use and prostitution. Here's Miracle's story.
I first met Miracle Draven at the Sexual Minority Youth Recreation Center in Portland. I went there to find a homeless youth to interview, and a 21-year-old biracial African-American young woman with a great smile and freckles volunteered. At first, I was taken aback. She didn't look homeless to me. Well, dressed and carrying a rather full book bag, she looked like any student. I took out my mic and tape deck, and she began telling me of her four-year odyssey living as a street kid that began at 17 when her dad found her with another girl.
He caught me with her. Yeah, he actually caught me in the middle of something with her, and that's how he found out.
Your dad?
Yeah.
What'd he do?
Father. He paced for like an hour in front of us, and we're like, yeah, really scared. It's really quiet. Then he had a conversation with me where he told me that there's no way I was gay because I'm black. He said all kinds of names because I was gay. You know, I'd never got any discrimination from school about being gay, from anywhere about being gay, except for him, period. So I'm gonna be completely honest with you. My first girlfriend was my stepsister. Her mother was married to my father. And of course, everyone, we lived together, and we had to live together. And with my father coming around to the whole idea that I was gay, when he got mad at me, he would hit her too. Like, he would beat her up because it hurt me. And we broke up, me and her, and he got worse, you know, and I just couldn't stay there. And then my new girlfriend was like, well, you don't have to.
Miracle left her dad's house June of 1997 and couldn't go to her mom because she didn't approve of her girlfriend, so Miracle began living on the streets. Shortly afterward, her girlfriend left her, and Miracle found a street family, other homeless kids, to watch out for her. She soon learned where to go for shelter and food at the three main services in Portland: Janus Greenhouse, a shelter, Outside In, a medical clinic, and New Avenues for Youth, an alternative school.
A day on the street would be waking up at Greenhouse, bitch about what food we didn't want to eat and how much food we didn't have. Probably leave there about 8-ish because they kicked us all out. And the only way to stay was to do chores, and, you know, I'm not going to do chores. So we left. Just to kick out this place we called Paranor Park after that. Usually, one of my friends who didn't stay at the shelter, one of my family members who somebody had called, would come down with the new thing of drugs, which is just the bags that we sell.
That's all we did all day.
Just find people to sell drugs to.
Yeah,
that's all we sold. It's crystal meth, and that was all we ever sold, and that was all we did. If it was a day when we were sick, then we'd probably kick it up at Outside In. It's one of the clinics and drop-in.
I don't know if they ever really knew we had our drugs on us or not, but we usually always did.
Some of us had bikes, and some of us didn't stay at the shelters, like we'd stay at Squatch or whatever. And if you stayed at the Squat, then you woke up whenever you woke up, and then you'd come down.
The Squat is basically, it's like camping. It's like camping without the luxuries of like a sleeping bag or a tent or anything like that. It's really just camping.
Sometimes abandoning houses, just